It's 8:45. We'll call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors. Please rise. Do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the building. Or the room. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Lytle, Byers, Setzer. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which is a general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held January 25th. Approve all claims through February 8th in the amount of $283,382.75. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling check 11120337 to the county treasurer in the amount of $5710 due to overpayment. Approve district court summary fee for report for month of January. Approve register of deeds fee report for month of January. Approve receiving and acknowledging the balance and liability for the county. And that is it.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Correct. Discussion. Myron.
Got a question. Since I wasn't here, do I still vote even on the minutes?
You can.
Okay.
Some do pretty. You've read them.
That's fine. I've read them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
Kathy.
I would just like to make a comment on item number 8.
Okay.
Approve receiving and acknowledging the balances and liabilities for the county. This is a list of employee benefits, sick time, and salary that the county is liable for as of January 1st. And at this time, we're just receiving the information, and we will, the HR committee will be reviewing it and making sure all the guidelines as far as the handbook are being followed.
Good. Thank you.
This is also something the auditor indicated that we have to.
Okay.
So this is another check off.
Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Okay, need a motion to go into closed session to discuss possible litigation and discussion of a personnel issue and for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual. And this is all necessary for the protection of the public interest. I got it right there now.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. 10 minutes or less, so it won't take long. Yeah, we don't need to.
I don't think they drew a comment on that.
Okay. Oh, really?
They did, huh?
Okay.
That's because nobody's reading anymore.
Reconvene the Gage County Board of Supervisors, 9:17. Need a motion to come out of executive session.
So moved.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 with Bauman absent. He had to go. Today is his first meeting with the government appointment on the economic development. So that's where Matt went to. Okay, sorry I misjudged the time a little bit on that.
Surprise.
And approve or disapprove specs and call for bids for rock and gravel to be opened on March 7th.
Are they in our packet?
I have not received anything, so I don't know if you have them already. But it gave you guys anything?
I have the ones one right in there.
Gravel. you normally use the same? Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Probably need that. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. We were going to pass that for a little bit then. Approve or disapprove resolution from the Nebraska Department of Roads and recommendation that Gage County withdraw the following projects from the federal aid list and cancel all agreements pertaining to such projects. Don, what's the resolution?
The 12-03.
12-03. Need a motion, then we'll have discussion.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Juergens. Now the discussion. Terry, you got any background on these?
What these are projects we've had on a 1 or 6 year plan that there's no money for. Mark Manelli came down a few weeks ago and said the state wants us to drop these off there because there's no money there for any of these projects, nor will there be. So these are older projects that are being, I guess, just withdrawn. Is that the word you'd call it?
Myron?
These are some projects that there's been a little bit of state funding money. The state has come down and maybe done a little bit of project work on them or something. And what they're doing is if you read there, where it says, whereas the state of Nebraska is not seeking reimbursement of the state cost incurred on such projects. In other words, if these projects... Some of them might go forward, but if they would go forward, a lot of that state cost would be picked up by the state or by soft match money.
This is in direct relation to us taking the 80% instead of getting federal projects.
Right. Yeah. So. And basically Mark Manelli said no. There is, you know, they're coming in here and they're saying no, take these off. We're not gonna bill the counties for the cost that we've incurred. Some of them, and I don't know. I thought maybe we had one time we had some of them were like, you know, $500 the cost the state has in that project. I thought one of them was $2,000 or $3,000. You know,
I thought the most expensive one was right at $3,000.
Yeah, and I think the total was $13,000 or $14,000 or something. Right. The state's coming in and saying, no, we're not going to. We don't want reimbursed for that. We're just there, and part of some of it comes down from the federal government. A lot of it from the state. But basically, there is not that money there anymore. They're going to forgive that money. We just need to approve that. Yes. We agree to you for we don't have to reimburse you for that cost that you've incurred, and then we just take these projects off of that list for now.
It's $14,000. We had the discussion on this.
It may be a 14.
And Terry did, or yeah, you visited.
16 now.
We visited with Mark Manelli over this, and this recommendation was, no, go ahead and do this resolution and approve that because he said that money isn't there no more. If they're going to just wipe that cost that we've incurred off the books, let them go ahead and then that's the best way to do it because Mark's dealing with it with other counties too and he understands.
This is what Lincoln County has filed suit against the state on, if I'm correct on that.
One of the counties has, and they had one of the revenue committees up there at the legislature here last week. It was on TV. There's some of these counties really getting after the state about how the state is doing. I mean, they're coming up and doing some of these things like this or not. They used to be a lot more accommodating, a lot more, I guess, helpful, and a lot more workable with us. And Mark Manelli has even talked about this, some of these things, the state, it's like they're almost, no, we're not going to do this. And then they're not leaving the ball so much drop, but that it's not, there's not that same workability there was there years ago or whatever. And
it's all part of the executive branch's way of governing the Nebraska Department of Roads. And so, yes, it's pretty negative.
The one night after that committee meeting on TV, Channel 10 and Channel 8 both had different county commissioners on there, and there was four or five of them if you watch both of the shows, and they both made comments about how the state is not being near as workable as what they used to be, and those comments. I thought it was rather interesting.
The state, we're losing, we have $17,000 would be our share in all these projects. And this is in relationship to the 80% and these are not in our five-year federal aid program and are unlikely to be programmed for federal aid dollars in the future. So that is why they want us to withdraw them. It's not saying they're dead. It's just that we're withdrawing the NDOR charges per bridge comes to the total of all the projects would be $17,000, and that would be under our cost match of the past, which is now in that new program with the 80% that we've accepted from the state. We're not meeting federal guidelines.
It doesn't mean we're taking the projects off the list.
Correct.
Still need to do that, and we understand that. But we're
correct.
pulling this.
It's their new billing direction.
Yes. Right.
Now, that's as clear as mud.
Yeah, if you guys understood that.
I know I did. Thursday at Kearney, I believe this is going to be talked about on, I don't have it in front of me, but they're talking about the state match on the federal dollars. So is there any more discussion on this item here? Moved by Lytle, seconded by Juergens. Vote. 6-0 with Bauman Adams to approve. You got your specs yet? We're back up to approve or disapprove specs and call for bids on rock and gravel to be open March 7th. These are generic specs. They're the ones that we've always used. So if anyone wants to see them, there's insurance requirements. We can get a motion to approve it. I got a couple things I want to talk about.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Roger, when we met a road and bridge up at Adams, the question that was asked us on when we cannot get our rock from the pits that are providing it, do we have an effective bid protection we can go after their bond? Well, I know I've heard that before. I couldn't remember it.
You know, basically, that's going to get you into a hornet's nest, just the way you bid it. Because, as I understand it, Gage County basically takes bids from everybody and then uses, you know, the closest pit with available product to get the products when you need it. Otherwise, you're basically telling them, you got to keep all this stockpile on hand, and we may or may not buy it from you. If you go through, and I don't think most counties do what Gage County does now because it got to be such a hassle. If we have the pit A is the lowest bidder on gravel, and we're going to go with them, and we're going to buy all their product, everything we need from that pit. Well, they run out of product. Okay, that's a little easier situation to go ahead and make a claim under bond. The way we do it, you still want a bond in case you have some problems, which we've had in the past. But my suggestion as far as advice on that that deal that happened, or the question about up there at Adams, I don't think, I don't want to say you couldn't go after it. You can always go after it, but it would be a lot more difficult than if you had one, this is our low bidder because of transportation, product, everything you want. And saying we're going to buy everything from you. We've got so many pits around here that, sites is, they're out right now. But boy, we got a township over here who's got to have some product. And so you go to your second, quote unquote, pit that has product available. And that's basically the way Gage County's been doing it for some time.
Part of that discussion, too, was on gravel last year. The main pit that we get our gravel from, they were broke down and other obvious issues. And since then, too, I've had time to think about that. Yeah, we may be able to go after a bond or go after them. Well, next year they aren't going to bid. I mean, that's just an example.
It's a catch-22.
They're not going to bid, and all of a sudden we thought we had problems this year. Well, next year everybody wants gravel or something or whatever, and then we're down to one less pit or maybe none. What effect does that have on it?
In reference to what he's talking about, gravel pits, there's basically two. We're down to two. You've got A-Sand and Gravel. You've got Consolidated. Both of them are located west of Fairbury, 3-4 miles and north up in the river. Those are the only two gravel locations that are close. I mean, and the other pit was up at
Western Sand and Gravel. I contacted them at Ashland.
At Ashland.
Ashland is not really close.
So the only gravel pits left, you know, at our discretion are those two to work from. The rocks, I'm going to say, is probably easier to get than gravel anymore. You know, down the road, I could see it being an issue. And the reason we were a little behind is because of he had to locate his pump, you know, the one that...
He milled it out.
Yeah, and it was gone. So he had to relocate, get onto a different vein. How long this is going to last over there, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking about washed gravel, you know, and basically Powell Pit, which is the one where the other supplier, is a dry pit, you know, supposedly. And the only wet pit left is a sand and gravel that we have that's close enough to it that we can haul out of, you know, economically.
Here's another question asked up there. The hours are from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. to haul, but if they need other times through April 1st through November 1st with prior written approval of the county superintendent, don't even have to be the board, they can operate outside that 5 to 6 p.m. if they need to haul material. So that's in the agreements here. So any other questions on it? Need a motion to vote? Or we have the motions. We need to vote. Ready. 6-0 with Bauman absent. Approve or disapprove holding a public hearing on May 16, 2012 to hear support and or opposition granting the City of Beatrice's application for a special use permit for C&D and solid waste landfill. Need motions and then we'll have Lisa.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Lisa.
Sure. In January, the commission held a public hearing to hear the testimony for this for the landfill project. The proposed site would be located on the land owned by the City of Beatrice since 1994. It's directly south of the existing landfill. So the project includes two parts, the construction and the demolition waste landfill, which would take care of that demolition and house and that projected date of operation is 2012, and then also the municipal solid waste landfill, which will be needed in 7 to 10 years is what they're telling us, as the existing landfill reaches full capacity. Because the City of Beatrice has not expanded the annexation towards the south end of Beatrice, where the proposed site is located actually is in Gage County zoning jurisdiction, and the existing landfill is in the City of Beatrice's zoning regulations. So there's where our limit is. The proposed site, which is across the road in our jurisdiction, is in an A1 zoning district, which, if approved, is an allowable use. For our hearing, there were 31 landowners that were notified, and those in attendance asked a lot of questions, and they shared their concerns, so you will probably be hearing this in the next couple months. Those concerns included groundwater quality, smell, the visual appeal, the entrance roads to the landfill, why the need for a C&D, which is the construction and demolition waste landfill, is really needed with an existing site already in that same section owned by a private landowner, and the proper management of disposable hazardous waste materials for that construction waste, and also the hours of operation, because a lot of the landowners expressed their concerns about their frustrations with the illegal dumping when the landfill isn't open, and now with the construction landfill site coming in, additional responsibilities to those landowners when those sites aren't open. So as the commission, we did recommend for you to hold the public hearing. That is set for May 16th to hear your support and the opposition of that special use permit. The reason for May 16th is because there is a timeline, a specific timeline required by the state of Nebraska and the DEQ for guidelines for landfill regulations. So they need that 120 days from the first start of the zoning provisions. So.
Questions?
My question is, does this affect that pond on the south side of the road?
The pond on the south side is part of their, that's actually, they're going to pull that out and grade land. Or
they'll drain the pond?
Yeah, it's not, it's just maybe a 2 foot.
Okay.
So it's not actually a pond. It's a water holding basin that's just full, pretty well silted in. So.
Okay. So Lisa, is this part of the program with
opening the new, because eventually we're sealing up the old dump and landfill.
Has to
and
go
moving
somewhere.
Over to the south side. Is that part of this process?
Yes. This is the future of the landfill. The only thing is within their city minutes, we have record of their city minutes, which they had at our hearing. It shows that the purchase of the land was made in 1994 for the proposed land site to grow, but it doesn't specifically say for the landfill. So that's why, and then being at city jurisdiction versus county jurisdiction, there lies the hearing process and the need for it. So,
Lisa?
Yep.
The way I understand it, you know, this construction and demo site on the south side, basically, if that can be used now, because there's a lot of product that doesn't need to go to the landfill.
Right.
That's filling the landfill up a lot quicker than it needs to be. You know, they don't need the liners. We're talking about shingles, you know, wood products, demolition, house tear down, stuff like that. That could be put on the south side with a lot less cost incurred, you know, from that. So that's the idea of doing this, because there's a lot of that type of product going in the existing landfill now that's filling it up. It doesn't have to be in there.
Right. It's going to extend the life of the existing landfill, probably, hopefully, up to that 7 to 10 years is how we understood it. But it doesn't come without consequences and the opportunity for the public to voice their concerns, and that's this entire process. But keep in mind, when the land is prepped for the C&D site, that ground has to be moved up to the west side of that property. And so there lies, you know, the dirt that it takes then to cover the existing construction site. So the whole area will be, actually will be used. So in our motion, I just might make it record that we had five members on our commission, and four of them voted for it. One of them, which was myself, abstained because our son, Justin, farms the property and is entered into an agreement until 2014. So I did abstain from that vote. So,
and maybe my question is actually more for Terry. See, that's what I'm asking. How does this incorporate in with the actual move of the dump, the landfill from the north side to the south side? Because if they set up this C&D, you know, how does that incorporate in with the actual process of transferring from the north side to the south side?
Completely separate deal. The C&D would be completely separate from the landfill. I mean, you're talking about huge cost. I can't give you figures right now, but those meetings we had, to make a regular dump, as the mayor calls it, you know, you have to have liners, you have to have, a bunch of hoops to jump through. This would not be jumping through those hoops. This part of it, and it is on the east side, I think. Is that correct? Is
where the solid waste would be on the east, northeast quarter of that area. So they would actually, my understanding was they were going to be entering in the drives on Locust Road. And so going up to, if you remember where the old land, that old homestead used to be, that's no longer there, where the trees are at. So as you drive by, so there is not a City of Beatrice representative here, so they could easily answer those, you know, technical questions. But they are very aware from our hearing the process, you know, and the concerns of the citizens. So hopefully they will address those issues then at the time, the next hearing process. So
also the cost to go to the south side, if you were bringing something into there, would be a lot less than two for the C&D dump site. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost would be less naturally, because you don't have to meet with those standards if they were going. I mean, we don't need a dump. You know, shingles, that it's not a requirement to go into the north side. It's filling up faster and needs to be filled, is what I'm saying. So I think it's a plus to have that option to be able to put that over here, but it's not of those strict guidelines that we are on the north side for right now anyway.
The other thing is the potential of, there is a facility, what was brought up to us before, there is an existing facility, a C&D facility already in operation in Gage County. So that was brought up to us at our hearing. But just to make special note of that.
Okay. And to point out, this is just a hearing, to approve a hearing for it.
That's correct.
And Rex Behrens did call this morning if we had questions to get a hold of him. So, but any more discussion? Thank you.
Welcome.
Vote. 6-0 with Bauman
absent.
To approve. Sheriff Gus, discuss and approve or disapprove taking bids on repairing mortar bricks on Southwest and northwest outside corners of the jail.
Good morning. This was an issue brought up at our meeting. We had Monday, our committee meeting. This is something that's been on the radar for several years, I think. Actually, the quotes I had that I presented to my committee from back like 2009, I believe. And it's just getting worse and worse, and we're going to have to address it. This is not on the list of things that was for the corrective action plan for the jail that we got dinged on from Fire Marshal, but it's still one of those general maintenance things we're going to have to do. It's just getting worse. I've even had public ask me about it. So we're trying to move along on these projects that we have. The board kind of agreed with me that we have money budgeted, just like we had last year, and I think it would be appropriate to use some of that money for this particular project here. When I had the two initial people come out and look at it to tell me something about it, they said our bids will only include what we can see. We have no idea what we have inside. It's basically the outside row of bricks. He said they're guessing it's the downspouts inside. Have you sprung a leak or thaw and freeze over the years, and it's caused decay on the brick and mortar. So once they get it off and replace, it'll just be some things will be open there, not knowing what's inside yet. But it is something that I think committee agree we have to get moving on this and get that taken care of.
I'll make a motion to enter into taking bids for the mortar and brick in the southwest and northwest corner of the...
Okay, moved by Dorn.
Yeah.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Discuss and approve or disapprove taking bids for sheetrock work and installation of two fire-rated doors in basement of Sheriff's Office per State Fire Marshal.
This is one of the items that I had on our corrective action plan I presented to the State Jail Standards Board. From Fire Marshal, one of the things he needed done, it's, to give you an idea where it's at, it's the basement under the old sheriff's living quarters. My staff, we've removed a little vault was in there, and we're trying to make it one big open area for our files because we're out of room to put anything. And Fire Marshal says anywhere that there's not brick and mortar, we have to have sheetrock. And we have to have, like, I think it's four layers of 5/8-inch sheetrock, and then two fire-rated doors, one going into that room, and one on the top of the old boiler room going into the basement itself. So this is what this would be, and this would be one more of those items that we can take off the list. I believe I asked for a 5-year corrective action plan, and I think they knocked me down to 3. So I think we're coming up next year's our third year, I believe. But we're whittling away at them, but again, there's money budgeted, and I think this is something we'll have to get taken care of as well so we can move forward.
I'll make a motion then to enter that and take bids, but I thought we discussed even in committee that would take bids now for 2 weeks and when we'll open them. That's not on here, or does that matter?
Well, no one gave me a date, so that's what I was going to say. We can pick a date if you wanted as soon as 2 weeks.
I'll make a motion, and even I should have had that in my motion from the other one, that we're taking bids and then we'll open them on...
Well. How you're probably going to run them a couple weeks,
right?
So
yeah.
You want to do it on March 21st would be, because I don't think we can get it advertised and have your bids back.
So March 7th or March 21st, yeah.
We can, if you want to try to run them close together. If you, it depends on what time frame you want. We can go March 7th or March 21st. How much time frame you want between advertising?
You know, the brick one out there, they're probably not going to work on it right during the winter anyway, so I think let's go with March 21st.
I'll make that
in my motion, yeah, that will open bids. And that should have been in the motion previous, the first one, too, then, because we didn't have a date. I missed that. But
so
then,
let's go on the first one, let's say March 21st. You want to go 9:15 on that one?
Okay.
At 9:15. And then how about 9:20?
20, yeah.
Okay.
The next one
we need to amend it.
To do the sheetrock and the two fire doors in the jail on open the bids on March 21st
at 9:20.
We have a motion.
Seconded
by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Now we need an amended motion under the first one.
Now amend my motion on the corners of the jail on the brick to also open those on March 21st at 9:15.
Second degree.
Second.
Second agrees. Discussion? Vote. 6-0 to approve. What else you got, Gus?
I think that's about it, unless there's something the committee wanted to discuss or brought up. Otherwise,
well, we can do it in committee reports, too, but we do have a situation where the garage door over there we have a real problem with is going to have to be replaced, and Gus has gotten some quotes on that under the figure that we need to bid, but he can do in his budget. I think it was like $2,821. And also the intercom system on the Sally Port, we have no way of checking people as they're coming in from a security standpoint, and that's $400 or $500. And so the committee felt that it was important. And Myron, anything else?
Yeah, that's correct. We discussed both of those. An intercom port is when they go bring somebody in through the garage doors. They have no way of, right now they have to use a cell phone or a phone to call in there. They'll be able to use an intercom to get a hold of the people inside. That's going to make it a lot more efficient, Gus said, for their operations and stuff. So, and for safety reasons, too. That's why he brought that up. So there will be that put in.
Answer your question, yes. Two of the three vehicles are on the road. The only one left was mine, and I laid that purposely so the rest will get on the road. So I imagine by the end of the week mine will be out and going. So we're all squared around there. So.
Okay. Anything else?
Dave Jones mentioned he'll probably be done here in a week or so with the countertops up there for the third floor screening station, and then hopefully we'll get that started putting together and working out something on that. So
okay.
We're gaining ground on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Discuss and approve or disapprove consolidation of voting precincts and polling places. This come from Don and Mai's discussion. Is Don is the election clerk, has the authority to create any new boundary changes she wants at any given time. But my concern was, I'm going to use Liberty and Barnston. A rural community that's already driving a long ways to vote is driving a lot further to eliminate their district to go into Wymore. I can understand the elimination of the Blue Springs district precinct and make them vote in Wymore. That makes sense to me. But the rural communities, they're already driving a long ways. I cannot understand going further. So that's where this discussion come about. And Dawn, if you want to touch on it.
When I started looking at my precincts, and for clarification, the precinct, we have 26 precincts right now. And I currently have them in 17 different polling sites. So your polling site is the building that you go to. The precinct is the table that you would go to receive your ballot. The law has recently changed to allow for an increased number of voters per precinct. In previous past two, not this most recent census, but the past two census, we have increased our number of precincts, so we added cost to elections. Our census numbers have gone down since that time on this recent census survey. And so that allows us to look at the numbers again. With the law change, I looked at my precincts that I have, and I'm able to consolidate or save money by grouping these together. And I gave you guys a spreadsheet here. As I have them grouped in colors, that is kind of what I was looking at as far as creating new precincts. And if you'll look on your primary, I'm using the 2010 primary election numbers because that's what I have. I also included the general, but since we're coming up on a primary, I chose that one. On your precincts, the first one is Adams and Hanover Hooker. They currently go to the same building. It's a matter of going to which table inside that building. Right now, as you can see, the number of ballots cast at the poll, which would be the number of voters there, for instance, on Adams was 187 people went to the poll. The cost of that current voter there is $2.41. Same with Hanover Hooker. If you look, it's a $2.88. Combined together, I was paying $5.29 for those voters per voter. If I consolidate, and I'm consolidating, adding on with one additional worker at those poles, possibly two, but with one more, that would bring my cost per voter down to $1.57. And I've done that through the precincts that I have. You go to the next one, Barnston Liberty, as Rex alluded to, Blue Springs, Wymore Ward 1 and Ward 2 currently go to the Wymore Community Center. Blue Springs is in a fire hall and Barnston, but you can see the cost per voter is at $405 or $455. If I consolidate it, it brings your cost per voter down to 94 cents. I realize, and that is the drawback of this, is that there is going to be somewhat of an inconvenience for those voters that would vote at Barnston Liberty to drive 8 or 9 miles further into Wymore. To those people, I would offer the early voter ballot. They can have the ballot delivered to their home. I have a copy here. You receive your ballot, and everyone did this during the jail election, where you receive your ballot in an envelope, your return ballot, you have to sign the oath, and you also have an I voted sticker. It's $1.10 to mail back, less than a gallon of gas, or you can drop it off in the drop box, or you can bring it into my office. That is one option. I realize that there is some benefits. They socialize, things like that, when they get together and voting, and it's an important event. And I don't want to minimize that. My goal in all this was to look at how I could save money. We are going to be faced with, coming the end of this year, Secretary of State's office has indicated that the automarks, which we currently have at each precinct, not building house, but each precinct. So if I have 3 or 4 precincts, I have to have an automark or an electric voting machine at each one. Back in 2002, the HAVA law or act was passed, which was Helping America's Vote Act, was required all counties had to have one of these machines. It's an electronic ballot voting machine for hearing or seeing impaired individual, or anyone else can use it. But you put your paper in, you vote on the screen, and then it prints it back out. Those machines at that time were estimated at $5,000 each. That was back in 2002. There was also money allocated to maintain those machines. That money has run out. We will be absorbing that cost at the county level. 25 machines right now I looked at with ES&S. If I maintain them every other year, it's $177.50 per machine that I have to maintain, and I have to get them to Omaha. So that's a cost. There is some savings as far as possibly with the ballots, things like that, with consolidating. In Beatrice, there's some issues that I have with a current polling site with St. Joseph's. There's more interaction involving the children, and so there's some safety issues. So I will need to move those anyhow. And then there were some comments, I guess, that I received on parking on one of the other locations, which was at the library. And I would switch those precincts to a smaller number precinct and try to make that flow easier for people. So that's in town. The Blakely, Lincoln, Riverside, and Midland precinct that I looked at trying to combine, that there you'll see that there's 87 voters that went to the Blakely precinct, which, if you take 12 hours that that poll is open, polling site, that's 7.25 voters per hour, which makes my cost of $37.48 per hour that this is costing me to keep this open. That's not the rent that I pay. That's not the American Disabilities Act requirements that we have to maintain at every polling site every other year that we use the polling site. It has to be held up. We get investigated. We were inspected 2 years ago, and we are supposed to be doing, they're sending someone out to do that again. These are all costs that the county has to bear. I'm estimating right now possibly $16,000. I realize that that isn't a tremendous amount of money, but it's a start on every election year that I possibly could save. Like I said, I know there's going to be some issues. You know, it's going to be an inconvenience for some people, and that's absolutely not what I'm
I'm aiming to do. I'm trying to be efficient, I guess, with the tax dollar. The other factors that I had to consider was, besides the cost saving and the ADA requirements that we have to meet, the Automart cost, I also have had a number of poll workers that have contacted me on the last 3 or 4 months that they're getting to the point where they said their health is failing, or they're getting to the age where they choose not to do it any longer. And we've had some very, very dedicated poll workers work 20 plus years. We couldn't have done the elections without them. They're wonderful, wonderful people. They can't get off from their jobs. People aren't staying home. You know, everyone's working. So the pool that we have to pull from is getting smaller. I can, by law, request you to be a poll worker. But if you don't want to be someplace, I'm sure you're not going to make it very enjoyable, you know. So I don't want to force someone to do that. So these are some of the things that I have looked at. Like Rex said, this can be my decision. I would ask for your support on this, but I think it's a positive thing. There's going to be, like I said, there's going to be some inconvenience, but for that, I do offer the other early voter ballot. So I guess questions.
If these changes are made, you'll send out a letter to all of the people affected saying your new polling place is this. Will you include instructions with how to vote by mail or come in here and do the early voting?
Actually, what I have set up is a letter that will go to each voter, a copy of the application form that they can send in to me to be an early voter, and then the instructions also what it takes to be an early voter. It used to be years ago, to be an early voter, you had to be out of the country, you had to be in the hospital. There was like four things that you could qualify. Now it's just a matter of anyone who wants to be an early voter can be an early voter. We have the drop box across the east side of the courthouse. Also, people come in here to do their business. They can drop their ballot off anytime. You can have your ballot sitting on your kitchen table till you're ready to vote it and bring it in. There is good and bad. I realize that. You know, it's going to be a problem for some, and some are going to love it. I have to bring these forward, I guess. I have to look at this. The other proposal on the spreadsheet is, what would you call them? I would combine, like, the Adams precincts, Adams area, the Barnston, Blue Springs, Weimar area. Blakely, Lincoln, Riverside, Midland, I thought about Homestead area because your mind, what goes over that way would be the Homestead Monument, possibly. Odell area, that area, it would be the same building, just a matter of one table instead of two. Philly, Logan, and Rockford Sherman area, I visited both places looking at the outside of the building. I know the insides are fine. The outsides for the ADA compliance, and so I chose the Philly Community Center based on the flat level service without ramps, just a little more, hopefully a little more convenience for the handicapped individual. I did look at, you know, and the numbers fit to consolidate Claytonia, Grant Holt, and Highland, but I chose not to go that direction because the county is growing north, and so I felt that there wasn't really a good location, good fit to combine those. Beatrice Ward 1, 2, 1, 3 would just become Beatrice Ward 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, and they vote at the Villa, and that would be no change. Proposed is 2, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3 would be Ward 2, and Christ Community Church would just be moving some people around, and then we would use the Beatrice Library. As for the Ward 3 and Ward 4, would go to the community church as well. They've got a large parking lot, and I've housed four precincts there already, I think. So,
Don and I have had this discussion in depth, and to me, I understand some of the changes. I also understand when you're dealing with people's constitutional rights, there is a cost of doing business. The mail ballots have an expense. There's not a doubt about it. Sending all the letters, there's an expense. That doesn't reflect on this. To me, there comes a certain point when we're a representative form of government. They can mail it in. But if they want to go to a polling place, they need to have an opportunity to be represented. And the rural areas are probably going to be impacted more than the other areas, just raw distances alone. In the scope of county government, $16,000 savings sounds good. But what is the savings in that area? You know, you look at it, is that area, what is the raw savings? So my thoughts on it, and Don knows where I stand on it, I'm uncomfortable with some of the changes, some of them I agree with. I just don't want to make it any more difficult or complicated for somebody to have the opportunity to vote. Kathy?
I guess I can see this as a good thing. I certainly understand your concerns about it. But if somebody were going to come to Beatrice and go eat dinner, they think nothing of driving 30 miles to do that. If they're in a rural community, they're going to be driving anyway to get to the poll and to drive another 8 or 10 miles. Does not seem like a major inconvenience when you consider the savings involved. I certainly don't want to inconvenience anybody when it comes to voting, but with the early voting, so many more people are doing it every day because they don't have to stand in lines and work around somebody else's schedule. They can do it at their convenience. I think that in this case, the advantages and the savings of the consolidation outweigh the disadvantages, and as Dawn said, she could do this without our consent anyway, so I guess that's my feelings on it.
Terry?
I guess I have had some discussions, I guess, with a few election workers. The only negative that I did hear was the busiest time is that after work time, that 4 to 6 time frame they both used when they said that would be the only negative. I'm just using my area now as an example. They would all be in the same, location didn't change, but you would still have an influx of people that would be coming in, and it would, I guess in my estimation, could slow that process up a little bit. And to be able to sit there and wait, it would be the only negative I would see. But the positive is the mail-in ballots probably are getting more popular, you know. But just the time frame, if we had a, if there was a big group of people come in that 4 to 6, I can see some standing in line waiting to poll, to vote, I mean. So
I guess I, when I hear that and in our thinking here, if the holdup is the is getting your ballot, or if the holdup is the voting, and you will have additional voting booths to go vote at, and then I would add on one extra individual to, you know, through the process of obtaining your ballot. I don't know. I don't know if they have that backup now.
So, but I mean, the election of people will be cut down, I assuming.
Well, not for your, see, when you walked in, for instance, in your polling site, you went to your table, you had five ladies on this side of the room, or the other side for Glendale Paddock or Elm Sisley.
Right.
You went to one table here or one table here.
Right.
There's five ladies at each table.
Right.
You had six booths to vote in on each side. So I would have six ladies at one table, and then we can have extra voting booths. But if your holdup is the ladies or if it's the people in the booths voting, I don't know where.
If I'd have to say it'd be the people in the booths waiting to get into your booth. You know,
so, you know,
I mean, so
possibly
your booths are going to remain the same.
No, you would have, you could have increased booths for people to go vote. You would still have the same
number. Will you have, say there's five booths in each district, will you have 10 there then?
Yeah, probably we will have more of that because I'm adding on also the sit-down booths because I've done some surveying of the precincts and they seem to really like, we tried this with some of the precincts where you could sit down, it's a partition that they have, sit-down booths. For a lot of our elderly people, can't stand for a long time. So they seem to really like those. So we'll be adding some more of those on as well as the stand-up booths.
And I do think that Don has put a lot of thought and work into this, to streamline everything, and it's probably a positive, I'd say, going down the road. I don't know.
I would say that I support Don in doing what she wants to do here. My only concern would be that this northern tier here, that we're not consolidating them all and treating them the same as everybody else. As far as travel goes, I work in Plymouth, so truthfully, I got to drive farther than them people do to come back to vote. So, and there's other people that live in Lincoln, and they got to come back to town to vote. So, truthfully, I don't see the travel as being an issue. As far as rural communities, I guess if you guys haven't had lines from 4 to 6, then you guys have been treated really well, because in Beatrice at 4 to 6, you're waiting. So, maybe welcome to the big city way of life. But, and the other thing is, I usually try and come in and vote early, because you don't have lines early. The polls are open all day. So, make your efforts to come in before 4 to 6. So
the mail-in ballot, as people get used to it, are going to make a huge difference also.
Yeah.
We've already seen historically that it's increasing the number of people voting, our percentages, which is fantastic. And I think it's more people that are elderly, that have a problem getting in and out, are going to figure out how to do that and use your mail-in. I like the ideas. I think they're good.
I guess, Don, that in relation to that, I have a couple questions, because your number voted on here, that's the actual number of people that showed up at the precinct and voted.
Right.
That didn't count the mail-in ballots or the early ballots from those regions.
Right. Yeah. My early voting is increased. These are the actual walk-in to
people that actually voted.
Yes,
and
at
everything.
The poll.
So, and then I know up here at Adams, the Hanover, they were there. They've been there at least for a year or whatever.
They've been
there
for a couple
years.
Elections.
But we had the two tables. It was confusing the first year for people. They walked in, now where do I go? And then they had to ask you, well, where did you vote before? And then you had to go to one side or the other. So in that aspect, I think that would really help if you just had one table. They come in there, give them their name, and away they go.
Well, I know that the other counties, Douglas has consolidated. They consolidate 100 precincts from what I was told. Lancaster, Sarpy is all consolidated. There's some other counties that have consolidated. Blaine consolidated, and they just went to one site. They just put everything. Everybody goes to one building, and I've heard that Kansas has done that too. So, because cost is a factor, for people. So they, and I don't know if we need to make that step, but.
But my other question is, on here, though, which ones of these are actually going to have a new polling site?
Where I have off to the right there, where it says polling site, no change or change, there is some change. Maybe, for instance, on Adams, there's no change. Wymore, part of them would change. It would be Barnston, Liberty, and Blue Springs. For the Wymore wards, there would be no change.
No change, but the other two, they will have a new voting site.
Right. That's
yes.
what
okay.
That's what this proposal is here. On Blakely and Midland, they would go to 4-H building. Midland, the way that township sets, it's kind of split around Beatrice, so they were going this way. They would go this way instead of that way.
So Lincoln and Riverside voted at the 4-H building before.
Yes.
So that's where you consolidate. Okay.
Elm, Sicily, and Glenwood, there would be no change there. The change for Philly would be that the Virginia people would have to go to Philly. That would be the bigger change there. Beatrice, Ward 1, would be no change. And then when you get into Ward 2, that I'm going to need to change regardless because of safety issues. So those people will see a change from St. Joe's to community. And then there's a mixture of wards that were going to library, so there'll be some shuffling there. And I'm not opposed to consolidating Claytonia, Grant, Holt. It would just save us more money because, as you can see, Claytonia costs us $5.56 per voter.
Gary makes sense there because that's the second highest one.
Well, if someone has a suggestion as far as a location, I really struggled for weeks of trying to figure out where do we send these people. Grant, Holt currently go to Pickerel. Do I bring Claytonia and Highland to Pickerel? Or if someone knows of a location that would probably be good to send them for, I'm not opposed to consolidating because of our costs there.
Yeah, because Highland is Cortland. Otherwise, you'd have somebody in Cortland before. And
so I kind of ran into a situation there where I didn't know which way to go as far as the best. And
how many miles? That's what you told me.
Well, we looked at it. It was about 12 miles.
I mean, well, it's that's black and white.
10 miles aren't that much. It's 12 miles. I think we looked at 12 to 14 miles for some of these. I do know when I look at the census that it's growing that way. So I thought if I have to leave anything, that was my reason for that. But when I'm looking at consolidating in costs, I don't have a problem with that either because that's just going to save us that much more.
Don, the biggest change that I see on this whole thing is the elimination of the Barnston Liberty voting.
And Virginia,
Barnston Liberty, Virginia. They won't have no voting precinct down in that area. They're all going to have to travel.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biggest change right now with this.
So the Virginia area would be going to Wymore?
Philly. So it's not all that far, actually.
No.
For some, depends on which part of the section you live in. And we tried to take the furthest point where you would be driving. Yeah. Blue Springs is just, hip, scop, and jump from the community center there. But Barnston would have, it looked like 8-9 miles, depending on if they take the, which blacktop they take in or how they get
in. But that's relative to they got the 10 miles to get to Liberty to begin with.
Right.
And then another 8 to 10,
to get to Wymore.
Yeah, it was, if they're driving to Barnston, I took that point because they have to drive there. I took what further they would be inconvenienced
somebody,
to go from Barnston to...
Somebody that lives on the eastern edge of the county down in that area could have to drive 20 miles one way to go vote, possibly. Yes.
Not additional, but altogether.
So then they would be driving as far as Gary would be driving that day. So,
but not as far as... Switching from voting at St. Joe out to Christ Community, I'm going to have to drive about another 4 miles.
Another 4 miles.
So I just want to let you know that.
I felt that was a justified change. Just I visit with Father Major, and he's in agreement. There is some concerns with the kids. When we put it in the parish center, originally it was in the courthouse in the basement. Well, then the construction came. Then I was told that we probably would be going through metal detectors, and I did not feel that voters would be wanting to walk through metal detectors and with the security. So at the time when I did some changing a couple years ago, I felt that that was the appropriate time to change it and move it, and we went to the parish center. I didn't realize at that time how much interaction with the parish center and the kids have. It's all the same hallways. So for the same reasons that I moved it out of schools, for the security of the kids and people, the kids are more valuable. So I'm sorry, but that's the way I looked at it. And so I feel like that I need to honor that too. And if there's a concern with the kids, and I will move that one. So.
Roger, question I have. Don, per statute, has the authority to do this. If we're voting on it, why are we voting if we did?
Well,
because she could still do it regardless, correct?
That's true. It's basically a show of support that the plan is saving money, and I think everybody recognizes you don't make it any harder on the folks to exercise their rights, but you could do the same thing just by the comments you've made here, too.
So do we have a motion to approve or disapprove the consolidation of the voting precinct and polling places?
I will make a motion to approve the consolidation of the voting precincts.
Okay. Moved by Setzer. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion.
I understand the motion. I would just like to make the comment what Gary had there earlier that... steady how to do that up here in the northeast corner where they could combine that too. I really think that if we're doing that in all the other areas, and I don't have no place up there for you right now, but I really think that if you look at just strictly numbers and cost and all of that, then that should somehow be combined too. Okay. I mean, just if we're treating it kind of equal. Yeah.
I can combine it. I mean, we've got three locations. It's just all.
I mean, it's going to be travel for Claytonia people or Cortland people or whoever, towards Pickard or whatever. It's going to be more travel, but at the same time, if you look at some of the others, that we're having those people do it. So But I don't have a facility up there either. I was trying to think of a church or something, since you had some churches in some of the other areas, but I don't have one yet for you.
One of the facilities that they are currently using could be utilized. They're all, you know, and I think the storm shelter, I believe there's a storm shelter at the Claytonia Cortland one.
Cortland.
Has a bigger, I'm not sure the size, but, you know, so, I mean, I can visit each one of those to see which one would be the best location and consolidate that one. I mean, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Any more discussion? Vote. In favor, Juergens, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, Setzer, against Adams, Bauman is absent. Okay, committee reports, building and grounds.
Basically, we've covered everything in our action today. We're still waiting on the fire marshal. We've called him to, the fire marshal, to come and look at where we're at and where we want to go. And the committee basically wants to delay as far as any changes in the building until we have the fire marshal come in and take a look. And as far as moving EOC and dropping the sprinklers and the suspended ceiling and what have you upstairs, have talked some about the possibility of, with all the limited offices and space we have over the Sheriff's Department, moving Gus's office over into the area upstairs and utilizing that with that and possibly Public Health Solutions also. But just discussions at this point, and we're waiting for the fire marshal to say, hey, this is where you're at, this is where you need to be.
Okay. Economic development.
We do have an economic development meeting next Monday night, 13th. Yes, that's next Monday night. It's been on Tuesday night. That's why I had to think and everything. And just so everybody knows that, it's at 6 o'clock again at Valentino's. Anybody is encouraged to attend that would like to. And I'm not sure. I know visiting with the Smart Solution Group last time, there was some comments about this may be their last meeting, but they may need, depends on how it goes, they may need to have another part of a meeting or whatever. We did discuss about the possibility of maybe to the point of getting that committee their own attorney, and had some discussion with some of the people on the committee and with Matt and with the mayor. And right now we are not at that point yet. I'm trying to continue to visit with the Smart Solution people, and we probably won't have a name of attorney at this meeting Monday night, but we're getting closer to get to that point, and we're also getting closer to hopefully wrapping this up and with Smart Solution moving on.
Okay. Emergency management.
I don't think we haven't had a meeting.
Haven't had a chance, yeah.
No.
Equalization, probably same way. Finance, Matt, or anyone want to touch on finance?
Basically, I'm a rookie here, but we just got started, went through all the buildings and everything. I think Matt did mention that budgeting time would start here pretty quick, working through that. So that's the upcoming big deal.
Okay. Human resource employee relations?
We did not meet.
Yeah. Well, this is just kind of a new format, so... Insurance? I don't even remember who is insurance now.
That's me. Well, I'm working to getting up to speed on that, and we'll have a meeting here in the next couple weeks.
Okay. Law enforcement?
Just a couple other things, I guess, that we talked about. One thing Gus had brought up, back to the finance, in his budget, currently he's used 63% of the budgeted amount as of, I guess, probably... Well, I wrote a committee report, and I'll bring up one other thing then on finance just a little bit, too. And we had a meeting up at Adams there within District 1, the township people, and at that time Matt had brought up some numbers that the township's rock and gravel, we'd use 41%, and I believe I gave that in that handout to you. We've used that percent of their budget, whereas the county, in the county's line of the budget, we used over 80% already. And part of where that comes from, though, and Matt pointed out a good point the other night, that this is the first year that the townships have their own line in the budget for rock and gravel. We had no way of tracking that before when it came in. It was all in one lump sum. And Matt made a comment that, you know, this is a learning process, because did we have the right amount this year in the county's line or in the township's line? We kind of knew where we were at because we could figure backwards how many miles they got and the cost per mile roughly, and we come up pretty close to that. The reason they're at 41% is a lot of it was because of the gravel pit being down. We just didn't get that hauled. And how are we going to handle that knowing that we can't get quite all that hauled going forward or whatever? But, yeah, otherwise, Gus discussed most of the sheriff's report earlier.
Okay.
For law enforcement.
Road and bridge.
Basically, everybody has a handout for the department activities here. What people have been doing, of course, the last week's probably been to do with snow removal. One item that came up, Galen received a phone call, State Patrol, about enforcing current restrictions on our county blacktop roads. And we did meet at Adams, like Myron said, Monday evening. And that road from Philly north to Adams is a 15-ton load limit on that road, which with the traffic that's on it, it's unrealistic to have that posted like that. And I know the reasoning behind it, to save the road, but the road, the farm trade has to use that road. It's an artillery. So at the next committee meeting, I hope we'll come up with a plan what we're going to do. There are, I think, five blacktops in Gage County that are restricted somewhat. Someone made the comment to me that, you know, didn't even know if that was legal, that we had to go by what the state limits were. So even on that Philly Blacktop North Road, an empty grain truck, you know, wouldn't even be able to travel, or would just barely make it with the limits that are on that road. So we have to look at that. I mean, because if we don't, the DOT will start enforcing those limits on that road, and they can be difficult people to work with. So, with that said,
yeah, we are Jeff Wagner from Manali and Wagner was down, and we visited with him about that, about what aspects, options we are, and I know we're also visiting some with Roger about what our avenues all are, because if we leave those signs out there and then they come in and start writing tickets, then we are basically leaving this up to the county attorney's office. Do they prosecute that or not? I mean, those are just all for discussion or whatever, and that's why we put it on there, and we deemed it being important to make a decision going forward sometime.
The other major thing that came up Monday, we got in the 1 and 6 year road plan. There's 36 projects on the 1 year plan with some federal aid bridges and armor coating involved. The 6 year plan, some people look at it as a wish list, but there's and by the way, I don't have copies, but there's a big list down at the county barn, highway department, that you could get that with to see what the projects are for this year. The problem being, or the not problem being, but the discussion coming forward is these blacktop roads, the 155 miles of blacktop roads we have in Gage County. Some of these are going to have to be starting to be overlaid, not armor coated, but overlaid, because of they're just breaking up. And the approximate cost that we received, just throw it out there, was $300,000 a mile to overlay these blacktops out there. And you take that times 155 miles, we're going to have problems down the road unless we, I don't know what to do, but it's something we have to address down the road because we want to keep them.
That's why understanding our tonnage, what our roads are capable of, is so important. Because once we lose the infrastructure we have, we can't afford to replace
it. Yeah, exactly. We try to maintain what we have, but it's an issue.
And I believe on there it says that the 22nd of February, Mark Minnelli is going to be down to explain the 1 and 6 year road plan and go over it. And at that meeting, we'll approve it. They were just down at this committee meeting to discuss it, see what we wanted to add or not, or if we felt it was all good. But then I don't know what if. When it'll be out before then or not, but the 22nd of February is at the meeting where he will be down here to discuss that, if you have any questions or comments or anything too.
Right.
And that's when we'll approve it.
And I guess that's about it for the morning, I think.
These are your town sheriffs. Those are town
sheriffs. Oh, okay.
Anything else for the good of the order?
I might just comment, I think sometimes many of the people that we serve aren't aware of all of the committees that the county board members are assigned to, those people that we're participating in funding, and the amount of time that is spent in working with those committees. And I know in my own particular case, I am on the Region 5 Systems and the Region 5 Services Boards, both operating out of Lincoln. I'm chairman of both of those boards. The Public Health Solutions Board I also sit on, operating out of Crete. Blue Valley Community Action, which is headquartered in Fairbury, and we have our monthly meetings from here to Seward to York. The Hope Crisis, which will move around from Fairbury and into our different counties. And I just think it's important that the people that we serve understand that we don't just come to a meeting here in our boardroom twice a month, and that's the only thing that we do. And in addition to that, the number of constituency issues that we deal with on roads, on bridges, on all of the other things. And I think, you know, the amount of hours and time I know that I spend across our whole area in servicing, and I'm really glad to do that. I'm glad I have that relationship. But I think many times we don't tell our story often enough about all of the things that we are involved with as board members.
You bring up a good point there. I attended SEND meeting in Lincoln, Southeast Nebraska Developmental District. I've sent some emails out to planning and zoning after coming out of that meeting. They are recommending in our future P&Z plans that any development with X number of houses, part of that has early warning detection system in place. The sirens that we pay for, which this grant that Mark put them in is from a SEND grant, but they're thinking that a development, if it's going to have 40 houses, is almost a village. Maybe they ought to have that in their plan, that in X amount of time they're responsible for this after that development reaches a certain stage. And that's probably a good point. At some point they're going to say, we want this to the tune of $12,000 to $15,000. So there is a lot of very good committees we go to that are not under the umbrella of Gage County per se. They're under something else. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Gage County Board of Supervisors adjourned at 10:26.